asking, did everybody go tea? If you didn't get tea, then what you need to do is to raise your hand and say that you didn't get tea and try your best. And earlier on, an announcement was also made saying that please bring your cup for the tea so that we don't have to distribute these plastic mugs which people throw everywhere and make the whole place very dirty. And also please try to keep the environment clean, and if you find something not necessary, then try to just throw them or clean them. And I'll also take this opportunity to request you that those of you who always come to attend His Holiness teaching, next time you come for the teaching, please try to bring a good quality FM radio. Because people always think that it is the translator's transmitter which is wrong. So I will try my best to improve the quality of the transmitter, but at the same time the battery you use and the FM radio that you use, all this makes a big difference. So please, since you are coming for the teaching again and again, to ensure that you do not waste your money and time, try to spend little more money and buy a better quality radio. Now it's saying that during the last few days we have been praying about this imminent war that was looming on Iraq, and as you know now that it has started this morning, so what we can all now pray is may this misfortune transform into a positive experience or some spiritual path. And even though violence has started, but we can all now pray is that the outcome of this violence should be something good or positive as much as possible. The text explains about the six preparatory practices, which is cleaning the house and the place where you are going to do the meditation. These are not outlined in the text, one after the other. And then you should sit on a comfortable seat, and then your mind should be mixed with virtuous deeds and thoughts, and then make mandala offering, and then make the supplication with three great purposes, and seek the blessing. So in this way you should fulfill these six preparatory practices. So in terms of the place where you do the meditation, it should normally be, of course, the place where you normally live. And cleaning the environment is extremely important for your health as well as for the health of other people. And therefore, the first preparatory practice is to clean the environment. And it is said in the text that normally when you sweep the room and clean the dust, even though you are externally removing the external dust, but internally you should think that I will remove the dust of the mind, the defilements of the mind. Even though right now I am removing the external dust, but what is important is to removing the dust of my mind and thereby to achieve enlightenment. So this will also make some connection with the Bodhisattva practice. And then arrange the image of the Buddha, and then a scripture and a stupa which represent the body, speech and the mind of the Buddha. And if you have these objects and articles, that is wonderful, that is good, but this does not mean to say that these are absolutely necessary. And in the case of highly accomplished great siddhis, the 80 siddhis, it seems they did not possess these things. And in the case of Milarepa, he didn't have any of these things in his cave. He was a meditator in a dry cave, so he doesn't. And if there was an image or a statue in the cave of Milarepa, then it is possible that a thief would come and steal it. but there was nothing present at that time. Just as these days we have people who do business selling scriptures and images, so similarly I'm sure there will be someone who will steal away the statue in the cave of the Milarepa if he had one, but there was none. In one of his story that it says that one day a thief entered his cave in the night, and when he was groping and trying to find something, then Milarepa saw and he laughed and he said, "How could you find something in the night when I couldn't find anything in the day?" And so these are not absolutely images, scriptures, and the stupas, they are not absolutely necessary to be arranged in front of you. And particularly in the Kadampa practice, they were not fond of, there was no tradition of keeping too many images and statues. And they have only what is known as the four Kadampa deities, that is Buddha Shakyamuni, who is the source of the teaching, and then Avalokiteshvara, who is the embodiment of compassion, and then the female deity Aryatara, who is the deity of sublime activity, sublime success of sublime activities. And when Adisha visited Tibet also, it is said that this female deity said that, "I will help you in achieving success in your spiritual practices." And the fourth deity is called Achala. So these are the four Kadampa deities. And in the case of Achala, he was kind of semi-wrathful aspect. And apart from that, they were not fond of keeping different kinds of ferocious deities and so on. And in terms of scripture, you can give Wisdom Perfection Sutra or the Lalit Vistara Sutra or a particular text that you have been meditating and studying, and then you can have a stupa representing the mind of the Buddha, and this should also be arranged in their proper order. And unfortunately, people have this tendency of regarding those statues which are made of gold or precious jewels as more important than those images which are made of clay and so on. So this is absolutely wrong, because there you are not paying respect to the image of the Buddha, but to the material of that image. And so you should arrange those statues and thangas in their proper order, and then in front of them you should make offering which is earned through right livelihood, not through wrong livelihood, not through deceit and exploitation. And so what is important is to make offerings which is not an outcome of livelihood through deceit, hypocrisy, pretension and so on. So offerings which are earned through wrong livelihood are not proper. Now in the case of the Sanghas, and particularly in the case of those people who have the name of a Lama and title, unless you be very careful, there is a great danger of earning wrong livelihood. And particularly in the case of the Lamas who are a lay person, in their case, they have this tendency of using all the offerings for the well-being of their family members, which is extremely sad and which is dangerous, and which is very risky, so you should be very careful. And so instead of helping your families in that way, it is better you start one or the other kind of work and business, use your two hands and earn money and then feed your family members. So livelihood means those things that you have earned through exploitation, which is so much discouraged in communism, and I believe that very strongly. So therefore, ensure that you do not make an offering which is earned through wrong livelihood, and then they should be arranged beautifully, not in a crooked way. Even though things have to be arranged beautifully, but At the same time, I do not know how much time you should spend making beautiful tormas with decorated butters and so on. And then particularly trying to propitiate and appease a particular deity or spirit through beating the drums and playing the cymbals. It is very difficult for me to imagine the source of the teaching like Nagarjuna and Chandrakirti beating the drums and playing the cymbals or playing the bells. They never did any of this. They were dedicated practitioners, read the text, studied them, understood their meaning, and then contemplated and meditated. And they do not have this kind of elaborate ways of life. However, we are fond of all this external paraphernalia and elaborate practices. And particularly if I imagine Aryadeva, the composer of the 400 verses, if he had to play one of these bells and cymbals because he had only one eye, it will be a big job for him. And then you should sit on a comfortable meditation seat with proper physical posture, and then the meaning that on your usual meditation seat, as much as possible, try to sit in a cross-legged posture. And by sitting on a cross-legged posture, you will straighten up your backbone, which will straighten your channels, which will provide proper flow of the energies, which will help maintaining clarity of the mind. So that is the purpose of obtaining the so-called 7 or 8 Vairochana physical features. And then do the meditation. Then in the case of our Western friends, those of you who are not used to it, sitting in a cross-legged posture, then you should sit in the noble posture. The noble posture is the Maitreya's posture. You will find Maitreya Buddha sitting on a chair, not on a cross-legged posture. So since Maitreya can sit in this way, I don't see any reason why you can't sit in that way. And then you should do the meditation. meditation on cause-effect relationship, where we meditate on the possibilities of changes. So according to Buddhism, it speaks about things undergoing momentary changes, and such momentarily changing natures can be understood by seeing the changings that we see at the grosser level, and this grosser level of changes that we see cannot take place unless subtler momentary changes are taking place underneath. So therefore it is important to understand this momentary nature, that these changes are dependent on their causes and conditions, and then you can ask questions why all these changes take place and why we experience such different experiences like happiness, suffering and so on. And something that is evident to all of us is that if you deceive and exploit someone, then you immediately afterwards you feel a little bit unhappy or feel disturbed. So by doing those negative actions, temporarily you feel disturbed and unhappy, and in the long run, of course, you will definitely experience suffering as a result. Therefore, so this is the law of cause-effect relationship, and given the case that we all want happiness and do not want suffering, why should we go on doing those things which produce suffering and which reduce suffering? So therefore it is important, since we do not want suffering and we want happiness, it is important to cultivate the causes of happiness and remove the causes of suffering, because such practices can be done only by human beings, not by dogs and animals and birds. They do not have the capacity and the intelligence to undertake such a practice. And particularly this human life is such a powerful life that it is said that even those bodhisattvas who are born as a god, when they look towards human life, they all appreciate and say how wonderful, what kind of wonderful life they have obtained. And for example, in my own case, I am now an old man of 68 years old, and I am still determined to spend rest of my life as meaningful as possible. And it is the way of the wise people to take care of themselves in a meaningful way. And if I do this, for example, in my own case, if I lead such a way of life, that will help me, that will make my life meaningful. Now, how should we do this? In my own case, if I think only about myself and forget about other people, this will not help me, this will not benefit me. On the other hand, if I develop some strong altruism and think of benefiting others, then this will not only help others, but as a byproduct, I will get the maximum benefit. And this is the way of the wise people. So this being the case, without hesitation, you should enter into such a practice. On the other hand, if it is a practice which is of benefit to oneself and not beneficial to others, then this is something that is not so important to do. And if it is something which is beneficial to others and of no benefit to you, yourself at all, then probably again there is a reason not to do it. So therefore we should do something that is beneficial to all and to oneself. And so right from the beginning, when you get up, you should make the commitment that I will never get discouraged to help others and to fulfill my purposes. And in order to do that, you need to undertake a diverse process of practice. You need to accumulate merit. You need to purify your negative deeds. And the most important way of doing is taking refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and developing bodhicitta. And irrespective of whether you are able to recite very elaborated verses or not, at least you can recite one short verse where you take refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and develop the bodhicitta. So sometimes for you it may be even easier to use a short verse and to meditate on the meaning. So the recitation of this verse, I and then also sometimes when we recite this verse, taking refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and generating bodhicitta, we have this tendency, or we almost have the notion that it is enough to recite this three times, and that is what we normally do when we recite a prayer. But this is again wrong, that you should go on reciting these verses in terms of your individual practice as much as possible, so until and unless you are able to bring about some feeling, some influence, some transformation within your mind. And particularly in the case when you do the visualization, first of all you should visualize about taking refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and recite just the first two lines. And because it doesn't make much sense moving towards the next visualization without developing any feeling with regard to the first visualization. And as and when you are able to develop some experience and understanding about taking refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, then move to the next two lines, developing bodhicitta. And when you take refuge, then normally there is also a process of visualizing the objects of refuge, and then you do the visualization of the nectar falling on you and purifying the negative deeds and so on. That is also beneficial. And also you can think about the presence of Buddha in general, and then the Dharma and Sangha also. And by recalling their qualities also, you can take refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. And if you visualize the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, you can do it in different ways as a host of objects of refuge present in front of you, or as is presented in the merit field. And in this way you take refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and then generate bodhicitta. And during the process of development of bodhicitta, again there are of course different processes of visualization. The fourth practice is visualization of the merit field. And most of us normally do guru yoga practice, and irrespective of whatever kind of Guru Yoga practice you do, Guru Yoga practice is very popular in all the four Tibetan Buddhist schools of thought, and irrespective of elaborateness or conciseness of that visualization, you should do that. And then after that, you should make the mandala offering, which carries the message of purifying the negative deeds and accumulating the merit. And the seven, when you make the mandala offering and do the seven limb prayer practice, first is paying homage. Paying homage can be done physically, verbally, and mentally. Physical prostration can be done either through half prostration or through the full length prostration. And when you fold your hands, also do not let the palms of the two hands touch each other. Do not just make all both the hands flat and let them touch each other. But what you do is give some hollow inside, and then put the two thumbs inside. And in the case of some people, there may be three thumbs. So whether it is three or two, put the three or two thumbs inside the hollow that you make, and then place it on the forehead, then at the throat, then at the heart. So this symbolizes actualizing the body, speech, and mind of the Buddha. And sometimes you can also place it on the crown, aspiring to actualize the crown of the Buddha in the future. And sometimes when people take the folded hands, they take it, their hand may be so flexible, they take it all the way up to the nape. But be sure that the crown of the Buddha is on the center of the crown and not at the back side of the head. So with regard to the actual crown of the Buddha, it is in the center of the head and not the back side, as you see in the case of the costume kind of crown that normally people wear on right side or left side or falling back. And then when you prostrate, when you do the half prostration, then make sure that the five parts of your body touch the ground. And when you do the full length prostration, then try to stretch your hands and legs as much as possible. And when you do the half prostration, then make sure that five parts of the body touches on the ground. The five parts of the body are the forehead, then two palms of the hand, and the two knees. And some people I see when they do the prostration, they just quickly bend two, three times without letting any of their body touch the ground and then stand up. Probably they are too rushed. And also when you do the prostration, make sure the palms of your hands touch on the ground. And even in the case when you have some problem, make sure. And of course, I can easily sympathize and understand people who have problems of their legs. Then of course, they can't stretch it out directly. So they may be stretching their legs on the right direction or the left direction. So what I'm all saying is that since we need to do those prostrations, we must do it properly so that we can earn proper results. And even in the case if you have been doing the prostration for a long time and you are in need of a rest, even in that case, make sure that you do the prostration, stand up, and there you take some rest. I do see some people, they would lay down, and then there they keep on resting. So all those physical expressions are physical prostrations, and then the verbal recitations are verbal prostration or paying homage, and then remembering and thinking about the qualities of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are paying mental homage, and then making offering, which is also called Samantabhadra offering, and then confession, where you employ the four antidotes, then practice of rejoice. Practice of rejoice is a very wonderful practice, And as one of the master clearly says, that if you are someone who is really looking for an easy way of earning great merit without making much effort, then rejoice at the good deeds done by others. And you, because you can rejoice by sleeping on your bed. And Tsongkhapa also has very clearly said that with small effort you can earn big merit through this practice of rejoice. And then the branch of requesting the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas to turn the wheel of the doctrine or to give the teaching, and where you are actually requesting the Buddhas who are already enlightened and not giving the teaching, you are requesting them to give the teaching, and then requesting them to not to pass away, and then finally dedication, where you dedicate all the virtues that you have earned to become a cause to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. So it is in this way that you accumulate merit and purify your negative deeds. And these practices can also be included in the three practice of accumulating merit, purifying negative deeds, and increasing the virtuous qualities that you have done. So these twin practices of accumulating merit and purifying negative deeds are included within the seven limb practices. And if you are undertaking a practice in relation to a tantric deity or tantric practice, then of course you can, again, there are techniques of reciting certain tantric mantras in relation to certain tantric deities for purifying negative deeds and accumulating merit. And we can also, in the suzerain practice, we can recite the names of the 35 confessional Buddhas. And through that way also we can purify negative deeds and accumulate merit. And then making supplication with three great purposes. So now we'll read the text. First of all, this is the biography of the Lama Selingpa, that you should decorate the place and then make a mandala offering, and then through making the supplication for three great purposes, until to that point you should undertake the six preparatory practices. And during the actual practice, you should remember that from the beginningless time until to the present time, we are overpowered by the mind, we are controlled by the mind, and the mind is controlled by afflictive emotions, and the root of afflictive emotion is performance of negative actions. And because of such factors, within this samsara we encounter countless sufferings. Now I will change this process, divert this process, and I will gain control over my mind, so that I will be able to place the mind on whichever object I would like to place it, and I will be able to release the mind whenever I would like to release it. And this point is very clearly highlighted in one of Tsongkhapa's texts, where he says that you should get so habituated with training of your mind that when you place it, it stays on the chosen object like a mountain without disturbance. And when you release it, it should be able to focus towards all virtuous practices, all virtuous objects. And in this case, you should focus primarily on that particular topic of visualization, and ensure that the mind does not get distracted and excited towards other objects, which is not your present focus of practice and meditation. And in the case of the present focus of meditation also, it's important to understand the object properly, their order, their number, and then towards that object your mind should remain alert and clear without getting distracted. And accept, therefore, in this way, accept in the process of practice of the perfection of concentration, all this should be done through analytical meditation. So, by citing quotations and reflecting on them, and by using your logic and reason, and sometimes by reading certain biographies of holy masters, And through this kind of analytical meditation, you should try to bring about transformation. So analytical meditation is reflecting in this way. And one-pointed meditation refers to those meditations where you do not analyze but let your mind stay on a chosen object. Now, for example, if you are meditating on the preciousness of human life, and when through repeated reflection, gradually when you are able to develop a conviction, and when you are able to think how fortunate that I have obtained such a precious human life, then at that time simply try to let your mind concentrate on that one pointedly without analyzing. And when that one pointed mind becomes weak, and then again analyze. So the purpose of analysis is to strengthen the concentration. The word meditation comes from the Tibetan word gom. Gom means to get habituated, to get familiar with that chosen object through effort, through attempt. So when you make an effort and make your mind habituated with a chosen object, that is meditation. And meditation is extremely important, or gom is very important, because Tsongkhapa in his Great Stages of Meditation says that oneself is controlled by the mind, and the mind is controlled by afflictive emotions. And because of that, even though you do not want, you are confronted by a host of ceaseless sufferings and problems. So what is important is now that you should be able to control the mind so that it is not guided and influenced by afflictive emotions. Since it is the fact that you do not want to experience afflictive emotions, it is important that you are able to gain control over your mind, and so that you are able to employ the mind only in the objects where you want to employ, and so that it is not controlled by the afflictive emotions. Now, with respect to the process of changing the mind, we can change the mind by finding its counter forces, by finding its antidotes. And this is similar like how we use an air condition. If you want to experience heat, you reduce the cold, and if you want to experience cold, you reduce the heat. So all these changes that we see in the external object or within the internal mind, the changes take place with conflicting different types of emotions. Now, these conflicting emotions and experiences, they cannot go together because of their mutually exclusive nature and because of their mutually contradictory nature. And in the case of the four elements, they are contradictory to each other. For example, moisture and heat. If you allow heat and the moisture remain together for some time, then whichever is stronger will prevail, and both of them cannot continue at the same time. So this is how you bring the changes. And when the antidote becomes stronger, then the opposite becomes weak. And similarly is the case with respect to changing and transforming the mind. And for example, in the case of your hatred, if you have strong-headed anger towards one sentient being, and if you want to reduce that hated anger, the only alternative is to see that person which was object of your hatred and anger as similar like yourself, wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. And through this way you will be able to develop some kind of compassion towards that person. And so now here you can see two conflicting minds, one focusing on the same object, one developing compassion towards the object, the person, another hatred towards the same object. So the only way to reduce the hatred is to increase compassion. And on the other hand, if you let hatred arise towards that person, then your compassion will become weak. And similarly, if you strengthen self-cherishing attitude, it will weaken the mind cherishing the well-being of other sentient beings. And if you strengthen bodhicitta or the mind cherishing the well-being of other sentient beings, that will weaken the self-cherishing attitude. And if you strengthen your mind seeing things as impure, then that will reduce and weaken the mind that sees everything as pure. And within the human mind, the contradictory nature is sought, identified through their mode of apprehension. And by seeing the contradictory nature of the mode of apprehension, you can find the conflicting and the contradictory nature of these different minds. And then you can strengthen those minds which you want to cultivate and reduce those that you do not want. And this can be done first through a wisdom that comes through hearing, and then through thinking, and then through meditation. So in the case of the first, the wisdom that is derived through thinking, it is almost like what is today known as using human brain. And through developing a series of wisdoms that comes through hearing, thinking, and then meditation, you develop a wisdom that's based on meditation. And I do feel that wisdom, meditation primarily means almost like developing a strong emotion. Now, for example, if you think, hear, and then think, then gradually you are develop a strong feeling, strong emotion, some impact on the mind. And for example, if you earlier had a strong self-grasping, then when you meditate on the leg of inherent existence of the self through hearing, thinking, and meditation, then gradually whenever you relate to the self, you will feel that there is no such self which you thought existing inherently. And then finally, in the conclusion, you should make ardent prayers by reciting prayers like the Aryabhatta prayer and so on. And then with pure prayer, you should seal the practice. And it's in this way that you should practice day and night the six sessions. And during the post-meditative session, you should restrain your senses, put some restriction on your senses, and whatever you do, you should do them knowingly, and be moderate in your food, and without sleeping, engage in yogic practices. And even at the time when you sleep, you should know how to sleep properly. And it, in this way, you should practice the courses as is taught by Asanga for developing realization towards kama abiding and especially insight. And at least as a practitioner, you should always think, you should always remember that you are a spiritual practitioner. And should always remember that the task of a spiritual practitioner is to identify afflictive emotions as your enemy and not to give opportunity to these afflictive emotions. Then occasionally, when you are talking to somebody, whether it is in the day or the night or even in the dream, if that is possible, try to analyze and try to watch whether these afflictive emotions are arising or not. And as soon as you, through introspection or through conscientiousness and through watchfulness and through care and attention, whenever you see some signs of development of afflictive emotion, then try to stop them, try to get rid of them. And sometimes if attachment and hatred are arising with reference to a particular object, then try to forget that object and to withdraw your attention, to change your attention, simply try to focus on the incoming and outgoing of the breath. And it is through this way you can reduce the flame of anger, attachment, so on, that were about to conflagrate. And then, as I said earlier, much is dependent on the intensity of afflictive emotions. And when the afflictive emotion is at its zenith, and then at that time probably there is no immediate remedy to bring them down. If the afflictive emotion is not so strong and it is in the beginning stage of flaring up, and then for example if the attachment is about to arise, then probably you can meditate on ugliness and so on. And particularly it is important to realize that when attachment, hatred, etc. arise with reference to particular object, we tend to highlight only one aspect of the quality of that person and develop either hatred, anger, or attachment. And at that point, try to be mindful and do not focus just on that aspect of that person which irritates you, but try to see some of the good qualities of that person.
Now, for example, if you are seeing a particular object, a particular person as extremely horrible, and that was your impression for a long time, and then suddenly you meet a friend and you share the same opinion to that person, and that person says, yes, that may be true to some extent, but he has all these wonderful qualities. And when, as soon as you hear this, your whole attitude changes. And so in this way you can change your attitude. And as I was saying, however, if it is a stage when your afflictive emotions are extremely strong, then at that time no point of reasoning and logic will work. And even if your friend tries to say something, then you will simply say, shut up. And you will not pay no attention to what your friend is saying. And particularly, I have been telling many of my Western friends that on the one hand, they are fond of emphasizing the point that be practical. But sometimes they are very short-sighted and they come with the caution, what is the shortest, easiest and quickest path to enlightenment? And which clearly, I always say, this is a clear sign of failure. And as I was saying, that particularly in the case when a strong attachment hatred and arises, when you are influenced by such strong-headed attachment and so on, then there is no shortest, quickest path to immediately get rid of that. But it can, just as in the case of human health, if your health is good, then even if you are invaded by certain sickness like headache and so on, then even if you get certain flu and cough and so on, you can take some remedy, some medicine, and you can easily get rid of it because your general health is extremely good. But on the other hand, if your general health is weak and fragile, then you're always susceptible to all types of disease, sickness, and so on. So likewise, if your general practice is quite healthy, and if you have a very healthy attitude, and you have been undertaking rigorous virtuous practices, and you have good habituation with those virtuous practices, then even if occasionally hatred, anger arises, they will not stay with you for a long time. And even if sometimes you get angry, you will not develop hatred and resentment and so on. Now, on the other hand, if you do not have such practices that are antidote to afflictive emotions, then you are really like a person whose health is very fragile and who can be attacked by all types of viruses. And at that point, even if you ask for the most profound and the most quick teaching, there is no such teaching of which is quick and which is profound. So what I'm saying is, as a practitioner, what is always important is to remember that you are a practitioner and that afflictive emotions are your enemy, and that you will never give opportunity to such afflictive emotions. And then, as is said here in the text, that you should be temperate. If you overeat, then it makes your body very heavy. And I have some Western friends who are really heavy duty staff, who are heavy built, and they do not appreciate their heavy body, and they do not appreciate becoming fat. And they always complain these things with me, but they keep on eating. So being temperate in food is also very important. And then the other practice is engaging in yogic practice without sleeping. And this should also be understood in its proper context, meaning that we do need sleeping for our health, and but oversleeping again wastes much of your opportunities and times. And in fact, in the Tibetan medicine, it says those people who sleep too much, that will increase their phlegm. And then, of course, in the case of exceptional practitioners like malaria, but he was very, very, in the case of malaria, but he has such a fragile, skinny kind of body, but he was boastful of his spiritual practices, and he says that sometimes I meditate while I am sleeping, and sometimes I meditate while I am eating. So there is a process of meditating and practicing during all the post-meditative sessions. So out of the four topics that has been explained under the title of preliminary practices, we'll now go more into the detail of the first meditation, which is on the preciousness of human life. The nature of a human, when we talk about a human life which is free and which is endowed with certain facilitating factors, we are talking about a state which is free from the eight non-leisure states and which is endowed with ten qualities, ten endowments, which are explained in the letter to the friend by Nagarjuna. The first out of the eight non-leisure, the first is wrong view, and then being born as an animal, then third is born as an hungry ghost, and being born as a being in the hell. And these are the four non-leisures of a non-human being. Then in the case of human being, the four leisures are to be born in a place where there's no word and teaching of the Buddha, and to be born in a barbaric land, and to be born as a dumb and stupid person. And then the eighth is to be born as a god with long life. And this at points are very beautifully explained by Kung Thang Sang in one of his texts, where he says, for example, if you are born as a slave to somebody, then you have no time to do any recitation and so on. So therefore, make an attempt to be born as a human being where there is leisure and where you are free from the eight non-leisure states. Now, in many non-Buddhist practitioners, of course, there are good teachings and messages of helping others and so on. But when seen from the Buddhist presentation, Buddhist philosophy, then it seems many of these practices are related to the concerns of this life. So the scope is very much limited. So therefore, if you are born in a place where there is no Buddhist Dharma practice, then it is quite difficult to undertake genuine practice. And even if you are born in a place where there is Buddhist practice, but from your own side, if you have wrong view, which is of course possible, and then in that case, it is you personally who has no such an opportunity to do the Dharma practice. And even if you are someone who has faith to the Dharma, then right from the birth or due to certain sickness, if your sense faculties are not intact, and likewise when you grow old, then your sense faculties degenerate, then again these are obstructions, but fortunately we are free from all these obstructions, and therefore you have the freedom to do the Dharma practice. And then endowment, when we talk about the 10 endowments, the 10 endowments can be classified into two, five personal endowments, five circumstantial endowments, endowments which are dependent on others. And in the case of the five personal endowments, to be born as a human being, to be born in the central lands, to have all the sense faculties intact, to have the wrong, not to have the wrong view, and to have faith to the right object, and the five factors dependent on others are presence of visiting of the Buddha, and he's having given the teaching, and his teaching still existent, and having followers to it, and having people who show compassion to others. And today we have access to the teaching, even though actually Buddha in the form of supremely emanated body Buddha is not here, but his teaching is still accessible. The uninterrupted teaching of the Buddha is still accessible to all of us, and we are able to see the Lama who carries such a transmission, such a lineage, and the teachings given by such teachers and Lamas are still there. And we are also fortunate that we are able to undertake a combined practice of study and practice. And in Tibet, there was a wonderful example of your discipline not destroying your learnedness, and your scholarship not destroying the discipline. Now this is important, because normally what we do see is in the case of Tibetan monastic studies, you get, for example, in the case of someone who gets ordained and then enters a monastic university and studies there, then on the one hand he has all those ethical rules and disciplines which he abides very faithfully, then at the same time he has all the knowledge and scholarship about the teaching of the Buddha. So there's the meaning of the scholarship and not and the discipline not destroying each other. So in this way you should think how such leisure and endowments are present today in your own case. Now with regard to reflecting on the usefulness of it, now for example in the case of material objects like gold and silver, they are of course useful, because through that way you can buy food and clothing and so on, but apart from that it doesn't have much potential, much capacity. Now in the case of human being, because of the presence of human intelligence, because of the presence of the discriminative awareness, because of the capacity to distinguish between what is right and what is wrong, human beings are treated as supreme or special comparing to other sentient beings like animals and so forth. So therefore, in general, the life of a human being is the best as a basis for actualizing the three types of enlightenment as an ultimate goal of achievement, and particularly human beings in the three continents, and particularly the human beings in this world, in the Jambudeva. Such a human life has been highly praised as the best basis for actualizing the path leading to liberation. And therefore, Arya Sura Bhagavapavo, he says that by obtaining such a state of life, we are able to produce a seed that leads leads us to a transcendental state. And these supreme seed is more precious than the precious jewel. And this being the case, how could How could someone make this resultless? Because this is the cause of continuity of all the sublime qualities. And similarly, Shantideva in his Bodhicharya Avatara, he says that having found such a leisure, if we do not make ourselves habituated with virtuous practices, there will be nothing more deceiving than this, and there will be nothing more ignorant than this. And without realizing this, and out of ignorance, if you still remain, if you still procrastinate, and then at the time of the death, you will be overpowered by great misery and suffering, and by the fire of the hell, when your body will be burned for a long time, and then at that time you will be full of regret and repentance, and your mind will be afflicted by such fear and repentance, and that is definite to come. And since having found such a precious ground, which is so difficult to find, and when you have found such a precious ground by luck, and while possessing a sense of discrimination, and if you again allow yourself being led into the realm of hell, then it is similar as if you are duped by some magic spell. Is it that I do not have a mind? How is it that I do not know that I am completely confused in ignorance? And what is there residing within me so that I remain so stupid and so ignorant? And the same thing has been said by Arya Ashava Gosa Pakwapao, where he says that a person with rich virtuous deeds, as a result of accumulated virtuous deeds for countless eons, you have today obtained this precious human life. And however, today, because of ignorance, if you do not accumulate even the slightest virtuous deeds, which is the treasure of merit, then you will definitely have to enter into horrendous houses of suffering in the next lives. So this will be like a merchant who goes for business in the land island of precious jewels and then returns back empty-handed. In the absence of the path of the ten virtuous practices, it is not possible to obtain such a human life in the future. And without obtaining the life of a human being, how could such a person have happiness? And such a person will only suffer, and there will be nothing more deceiving than this, and there will be nothing more ignorant than this one. So, reflecting on these teachings, develop a strong desire to extract the meaning of this human life, as is said in the Bodhicharya Avatara, where Shantideva says that by giving gift to this human body, now let your body engage into some meaningful purposes. And similarly, he says, by depending on the board of human life, you will be liberated from the great water of suffering. And since this boat is difficult to find in the future, you fool, this is no time to sleep.
And also, when we aspire to achieve the life of a human being, we are not saying, we are not aspiring to achieve just a human life or human life for the sake of human life, but we aspire to achieve human life so that gradually we are able to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. So in the case of those people, whenever they encounter certain physical or mental sufferings, they should pray that through such suffering, such problems, may they able to purify their negative deeds, and may they continuously achieve human life so that they are able to undertake spiritual practice, particularly Mahayana practice that leads to achievement of enlightenment. And such life is of great purpose also in relation to the temporary achievement of human life and also in terms of achievement of liberation in the long run. And next is reflecting on the meaning, how it is difficult to point. And here you there are two points. That is reflecting how it is difficult to find in terms of its cause and how difficult it is to find in terms of its fruit. In the Lamrim, there is also a contemplation which is done reflecting how it is difficult to find in terms of its examples. If you do not feel so convinced with the meditation by taking the example, then you can meditate in terms of the cause and the effect. And through that well, you will be able to see how difficult it is to find such a human life. Now look at the fish and the chickens, how many of them are killed, and particularly in the case of the chickens, many people say that the red meat is not good for health, so they keep on eating chicken, so they become the victim. And so imagine if you are born one of these, what will be the plight, what will be the situation, either as a fish or as a chicken. And similarly, there are so many different types of, you can reflect on the condition and nature of different types of birds, animals, insects, and then in the text it says that the animals that we see are what is known as the animals that live separately, and then the text explains about the animals that live near the seas whose numbers are much more than the other class of animals. And then according to the text, being seen the hungry ghost, and then in the hell, their numbers are much more. You can understand this if you employ some reason and some logic. And if you employ your reason and logic in those areas where you can judge, where you can examine, and through that way when you are able to develop some conviction, then you can trust the other teachings of the Buddha, which you may not be able to understand right now. And of course there are accounts of some great masters visiting hell realm and so on and liberating sentient beings from there. And then there are also people who are able to see the presence of the devas, the nagas, and so on. And then, and particularly the when you observe someone entering into trance, and when a positive or negative spirit enters into it, that may not be something holy or sacred, but it will at least help you to develop some conviction about the presence of different types of spirits which may not be visible to us right now. Now when you reflect in this way, you might think or you might feel that yes, in general human life is very difficult to find, but I don't have to worry because right now I am a human being, I have got this human life, and I have met this precious Buddha's teaching, and I have good teachers with me, and I'm surrounded by good friends, good Dharma practitioners. You might get, you might develop that kind of feeling, and this again is absolutely wrong, because Buddha has said that self is the protector of the self, and no one else can be the self. Buddha did not say that you go on doing all stupid things and I will be there to protect you. He never said that. And so in order to receive the blessing of a Dharma protector, and in order to receive the guidance and protection of a teacher or the Buddha, at least you should first of all become a good receptacle for that. And in your case, if you have the no basis it is not possible to receive any blessing. It is not possible to receive any protection. And in the case, if you keep on doing all the negative deeds, and still if you are receiving from some so-called Dharma practices and so on, then this clearly shows that the one who is giving you the protection and help is not a good Dharma protector, but maybe an evil negative spirit. So what is important is to think that it is not enough that I am born in a Buddhist country or I am surrounded by great teachers and so on, but what is my state? What kind of practice I have committed? Have I observed the 10 virtuous qualities very faithfully? Have I observed the vows and precepts carefully? You need to think in that way. When you reflect in that way, then you will find that all your virtuous practices have always been defiled and contaminated with all types of eight worldly concerns, either the eight white worldly concerns or the eight black worldly concerns or a mixture of them. And in my case, when I reflect in this way, I do feel that when I reflect on the outcome of certain practices, I sometimes do not feel much confident. For example, when I reflect what I have been doing in this day and so on, and then reflect, did I do something that will really guarantee that I will obtain a precious human life in the future? I do not feel so convinced, so confident. So I only feel that probably it is the meditation on bodhicitta and view of emptiness which might help me in the future. So first you meditate on how human life is so difficult to find by reflecting on the examples, and then reflecting on the causes, then reflecting on the results. Now in the case of the first, that is difficult nature of finding human life in terms of the cause, Aryadeva in his 400 verses highlights this point, and as he has said, that in the case of the majority of the people, they do not follow the sublime ways of life, but they follow the side which is not healthy, which is not sublime, and therefore most of the individuals fall into the negative state of existence. And even in the case of life, which is a basis for higher life and liberation, when we engage without hesitation in committing the negative deeds, and also there are very few people who do not restrain the negative deeds, and therefore many of us fall into negative state of existence. And therefore actualizing a happy state of life is extremely difficult. It is said in the Bodhicitta Avatara, where he says that with such a way of life as I am adopting right now, I will not obtain even a human life, and without obtaining human life, I will go on committing any negative deeds and no virtuous deeds. And the same thing is said in the Nagarjuna's letter to the friend, where he says that obtaining human life is as difficult as a blind turtle popping up his head and having it enter into the hole of a yolk which floats in the ocean. And imagine how many negative deeds we might have accumulated in the past whose results are yet to ripen. And when you reflect in this way, you will be amazed how I am able to obtain such a human life this time. So what is being explained in this letter to the friend by Nagarjuna is reflecting on the examples. And he also says that if you have a golden vessel, and if you use that golden vessel for storing your storing what you have vomited, then people will say, what a stupid person he or she is. So similarly, having born as a human being, if you do not engage in virtuous practice, there will be nothing more stupid than this. Next is reflecting on the difficult nature of finding human life in terms of the result. And in general, beings in the three negative states of existence are many more, and those who have obtained the life for higher rebirth is very less, and particularly a life which is free from the eight layers is extremely difficult, and particularly having obtained such a leisure, to be able to have one's mind inclined towards virtuous practice is like almost like star in the day. So since this human life, which is of so much meaning, so great meaning, and so difficult to find, and having found this human life today, you should try to try to extract the essence of this human life through many ways. And here it's important to remember that the life that you have obtained and the life that's obtained by Milarepa, there's no difference. But in our case, most of our life is, as the great Kadampa masters used to say, that with this kind of luxurious dharma practice, it is not possible to achieve liberation. And this is true, because in the case of most of our life, we spend most of our life distracted to so many objects of distraction. And with that kind of distracted way of life, how can we expect to achieve enlightenment? And when you again reflect in this way, then you will again will develop some kind of disbelief. How is it at all possible that I've obtained such a human life? Isn't this a dream? And then you will be able to see the preciousness of such a human life, and then develop a wish to extract the meaning of this human life. And with regard to extracting the essence of human life, the best way is to do dharma practice in general. And in fact, when we talk about undertaking the dharma practice is necessary because we want happiness and do not want suffering. And you might here feel that even though it is necessary to do the dharma practice, but can I do the dharma practice? You can certainly do the dharma practice, because as an external factor, you have met the Mahayana spiritual masters, and as an internal factor, you have obtained this human life with leisure and endowments. And again, you might think, yes, that is fine, I must do dharma practice, but I can do dharma practice in one of the succeeding lives or subsequent lives. This is improper, because it is difficult to obtain such a human life with leisure and endowments in the future lives. And even if you say, I will undertake the practice in the coming months, and that is also wrong, because in general death is definite and the time of death is indefinite. And so out of the many ways of extracting the essence of human life, making your mind habituated with the bodhicitta practice is the most supreme and the most important. And you should think that I will undertake all these preliminary practices for training my mind in the bodhicitta. So we stop today's session here. May we all be able to develop bodhicitta, which we have not developed, and further staying than the bodhicitta that we have developed. So